Hey, Denver, it's time for this bi-weekly meeting of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee of Denver City Council. Join us for the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee starting now.
Hey, y'all, be on your best behavior.
Unfortunately, this is our best behavior.
Well, there it is. Ready for a ride, huh? All right, good afternoon and welcome to the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Today is Wednesday, November 19th, 2025. My name is Chantel M. Lewis. I'm your counselor for District 8, and I am excited to chair this committee. We'll get started with a round of introductions, and we'll start with you, Councilwoman.
Good afternoon. Casey Gilmore, District 11.
Good afternoon. Paul Cashman, South Denver, District 6.
Nora Alvidres, lucky District 7.
Kevin Flynn, exciting Southwest Denver's Council District 2, highest natural point in the city.
No, that's not true.
400 feet higher.
I'm glad I'm not sitting between those two.
Chris Hines, Denver's Perfect 10, home of the highest artificial point in Denver.
There you go. All right. Well, we have three action items up today, and we will start with a presentation from Dan. If you all can introduce yourselves, and you can jump right in.
George Karyanakis, Interim Chief Commercial Officer.
Kevin Forget, State and Local Legislative Advisor.
Pamela Deschamps, Senior Vice President of Concessions at Den. Good afternoon, Chair Lewis, members of Council. We are back. You may recall we came before you in September to propose 28 contract amendments, otherwise known, they're Group 2, also known as Middle Earth contract amendments. Our goal with these amendments is to right-size this group of concessionaires that is stuck in between the old legacy contracts and then the newer, more modern terms that we're allowing. Now, we're midway through this plan of amending all 28. 14 are currently somewhere in the council process. To recap how we landed here, we took all the concessions contracts at Den, and we grouped them into three specific buckets. Group one, also known as the old school contracts, these are legacy agreements, which some began in 1995, have been around for quite some time. Group two, the group that we're here before you today with, also known as Middle Earth, these are the ones awarded between 2019 and before January 1st of last year, which is when we changed the term length. We'll zero in a bit further on this group two set. The original terms in these agreements are 7 and 10 years for food and beverage and 7 years for retail locations. So these group two contracts, they lack the legacy benefits of group one, as I mentioned, and the modern agreements from group three. None of these received the premium value concession, also known as PVC award. None received COVID 3-year extensions. Also did not receive any type of federal aid, ARPA and CRISA. Three amendments passed on consent at last week's TIN committee here, and today before you, we have six for your consideration today, with the remaining five to come through very soon. In the appendix, you'll find a list of contracts that have already been approved by Council on September 29th. And that concludes our presentation. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the time. Councilman Cashman, you're first in the queue.
Yeah, that was the shortest presentation for the longest list of contracts I've ever seen, as a matter of fact. Can you go back to the slide where you show the three groups of concessions?
Should be showing.
There we go. So you were describing, maybe it's even the next slide where you describe what one group has and what the other, why don't they have these various benefits and so on? How do they end up?
The Middle Earth group, that it's simply based on timing. So the group one contracts, if we can go back, these include contracts that have been at the airport since the day we opened. Mm-hmm. not all of them, but a large percentage. During that time, these concessionaires have benefited from years of holdover, perhaps some PVC awards, which back when we had the PVC program meant having a brand new contract term start upon award. Furthermore, as we entered into the COVID era, these concessionaires received three-year term extensions just to remain whole through the pandemic. Finally, Group 1 concessionaires most received federal relief through the ARPA and CRISA grants. So that's the difference. Now let's jump to Group 3, also known as the newbies. After analyzing the construction costs, which are now up to about $2,000 per square foot to build and design a concession, the costs became out of control. So we made a decision that effective January 1st, 2024, new contract terms would be 12 years for food and 9 years for retail, just to allow the concessionaires time to recover all of their capital.
And the other question, I think was restaurants have either 7 or 10 years. Why 7? Why 10?
That's a great question. The industry used to have the mindset that quick serve restaurants, also known as fast food outlets, could recover their capital costs sooner, and therefore it was an industry based practice. Quick serve could be 7 years. For the knife and fork restaurants, also known as casual dining, there was a mindset in the past that perhaps this would be more expensive to build out. What we learned from looking at all of the construction costs is that's not the case. Both types, quick serve and casual dining, require a lot of investment. These are the expensive infrastructure purchases, hoods, grease interceptors, cooking equipment. So based on the information that we looked at, we decided all food should be 12 years because it is so incredibly expensive.
12 years,
yes.
Okay.
So no more breaking it up into category.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
That's all my questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Councilman Flynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The 6 amendments for Mission Yogurt, one in particular, I think it's the one with the Maria Empanada, Bindery and Uncle. That's the one I think was held up for quite some time because of United Airlines, the mezzanine lounge that was being constructed right above Mission Yogurt space, preventing them from continuing build out for quite some time. That's only got a 2-year extension. Is that going to 12?
Yes, it's going from 10 to 12.
Okay. Since that had a bit of an additional delta in their cost, was there any consideration given to a lengthier period?
That is a very good question. The Mission will still get the full term because the clock didn't start ticking yet. And that is a situation that we're handling separate from these amendments.
Or some other kind of consideration or settlement?
Yes.
Perhaps. Okay. Because the clock was ticking on his capital.
Correct.
It just wasn't ticking on his rent yet. All right. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. Councilmember Gilmore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation, and thank you for extending the period of time. This has always been a huge financial consideration for anybody doing business out at the airport in order for them to recoup and hopefully make a profit. Making a profit is the big part of it, and wanted to understand how you might have included the airport disadvantage managed business enterprise participants, and how did you hear from them?
Well, thank you for asking. I'll start with the fact that the ACDBE partners, they will remain joint venture no matter what happens, right? So they're locked in. We, going back to the beginning of when we decided to change the contract terms effective January 1st, most of who we heard from and spoke to were the smaller ACDBE partners, right? Expressing their concerns and how they may never see a return unless we do something about it. So they're our first that we speak to, and it'll remain no change based on what's going on at the federal level.
Great, appreciate that. Because, and then with this, With the extension, are there also opportunities? I know there were talks about DEDO, the Denver Economic Office, and having some sort of mentor protege program for smaller businesses that want to get in and maybe have a kiosk or a concessionaire space. I know many of these that are being extended have a retail space, but there's also that business background and capacity that's always welcome and helpful. And so I wanted to give you an opportunity to maybe share a little bit about that.
Thank you for that. We have a few programs which support small businesses. One is the Business Development Training Academy, which operates through our Culture and Strategy Group. This is the first of its kind actually in the nation, a program which teaches prospective or current ACDBE partners how to do business in an airport. So we're really proud of that program, BDTA. We also have an incubator program through our third-party kiosk operator, Provenzano Resources, where we, you know, when we're out in the community and speaking with small business, encourage them to try out the program. Through this program, there's not the huge investment that small businesses have to take and take that huge risk. They can get in for minimal fees, right? And those are two of the programs that we have at the airport specifically.
Great.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Great. Well, thank you all so much for the presentation. Really appreciate it. We just need a motion and a second. Councilmember Gilmore and Councilmember Hines.
This is just the six.
Yeah, for today.
Yeah. And the others.
Right. You good with that, Sue?
Yes.
Okay. Great. We have a first and a second from Gilmore and Fawn. All right. Thank you all so much. Next up, we have a presentation from Kazer.
Yes.
Oh, do we need a roll call vote? No. Great. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
Keep her in line.
That's exactly right. Somebody has to. Hi, you all can introduce yourselves and then you can get started.
My name is Ken Arellano with the Office of Climate Action, Stability, and Resiliency with the Workforce Administrator for this contract.
I'm Shannon Jan. I'm the Director of Green Workforce for CASR.
So today, well, first of all, thank you for allowing us this time to speak with you, Council. Today I'm going to talk to you about the Green Fleet Electric Vehicle Training Initiative. On this slide, you can see our current trend for the city's fleet operations. As you can see, we're going to continue to increase the purchase of electric vehicles for city departments. And the future, we should be at 100%. This will impact staff because with more electric vehicles, this will require the training for high voltage and electric vehicle maintenance. If we don't provide that training, the challenge will be that we will have an unsafe workplace and the safety of the city fleet technicians because they are lacking the training required for that high voltage and electric vehicle maintenance. And if we don't begin training city staff, we will continue to send those electric vehicles to external repair shops. And those electric vehicles will also be out of service, thus costing the city more. Also, we will have fleet staff in unsafe situations because they do not have the knowledge in regards to high voltage and electric vehicles. Next slide. With CASR, what we realized is that we needed to address the knowledge shortfall. So we put out a electric vehicle training RFP, and we realized we needed the following. We needed to assess the training needs across all agencies who utilize electric vehicles. We also needed to assess those fleet facilities, and we needed training on high voltage safety and the maintenance of those electric vehicles. So in this RFP, we also wanted the outcome of 100% trained in high voltage safety and the maintenance of electric vehicles. On the right of this slide, you can see the contract details. Next slide. We're here to, so if you ask why should we fund this now, this supports the city's electric vehicle expansion by ensuring we can meet the increasing need for high voltage safety and electric vehicle maintenance while we manage those maintenance costs. And this upskilling helps retain experienced technicians who may be considering retirement or for those who want to learn a new technology. This training will provide them the information needed to make informed decisions and to be safe in the facilities when they are around electric vehicles. With this investment, the city will meet Denver's long-term commitment to be carbon-free by 2040. Any questions?
Councilman? Is this SARE online, the Zozo principal?
No, Lashita, okay. She is not here, no.
Okay, well, I wanted to give her a compliment. I think I've worked with her and the organization in the past, and I think they're a fine organization.
Awesome. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Councilman?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this training on our site, or is it on off-site at Zozo's facility, if they have one?
No,
do they come to each of our sites?
They're going to be at each designated site. So the sites that we have are the Denver Police Department, Denver Fire Department, DPR, Denver Parks and Rec, and Dottie.
Okay. And I know that it's been very difficult for a lot of our fleet maintenance facilities to maintain auto mechanics in general. How difficult is it to find, hire, recruit, and train EV techs, mechanics? We have police vehicles sitting, waiting to be repaired, such that we're having to put two officers in a car like old days, mm-hmm. Because they don't have the fleet available. So is it difficult to have?
Can I ask our subject matter expert, Tom Pacheco?
Certainly.
He can fill us in with that.
Thank you.
It'd be nice. I don't know if I need this to speak.
You need to for our TV.
Oh, sorry about that.
TV.
This is my first time here. So just so you know, before I on November 14th, I left CDOT, and I had a hybrid position there as their electrification program manager and their workforce development manager. And we saw this trend coming also, so we went out and interviewed a lot of fleets, and we're dealing with the exact same place that you guys are, City and County Denver is. The technicians that you have in place today can do this work if you upskill them correctly. They already have the basics. The basics is low voltage systems, low voltage, 12 volt, basic diagnostic and advanced diagnostic. If you can get them to recapture their skills that they haven't used in a long time, then the step to go into this next step on electric vehicles is really good. And the other part about that is they do hybrid vehicles every day. Okay. And so hybrids. And the other part about this, they want to know about this stuff. They want to know it to overcome their fears of working on these vehicles. And once you overcome those fears, I'll give you a quick comment. I'd rather work on electric cars than change a diesel fuel tank. I'm not smelly, and I go home clean. So once you get them to understand what they're doing, they really like this gap. And they know a lot about the basic fundamentals already.
So it's the same individuals?
Yes.
Same individuals.
Just like cross-training or up-training?
Up-training them, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Well, God bless them, because I don't want to do either of those. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Councilman Hines, did you want to jump in? Okay. I did have one question, because I had a similar question about the upskilling. Will you hire any additional folks, or is it just the folks that you have now that you would train?
That's good. So they're going to do a fleet analysis of all the skill sets of all the technicians, and that's what we were doing with a lot of other fleets, including CDOT, where I was at. Once we get that analysis done, we'll be able to determine how many technicians actually have the skill set to take this training? And it's a tiered training. They want to do the A-level technicians, all the training, and they want to train lower-level technicians at a lower level so they're all safe on all this. But yes, they won't need to bring any more technicians in. If you need to bring more, I don't know where you're going to find them. Everybody's searching for technicians. So yeah, we'll do that analysis and work with a group that are already ready to take this training and work with them first.
Great, thank you. And then what's the total size of the fleet? Do you have that?
Of
the fleet.
Which fleet? City County of Denver?
Yeah.
I don't know that one.
James. That's James' area of expertise.
I like that green shirt.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. James Warren, Senior Sustainable Mobility Policy Advisor for CASR. 3,300 vehicles, thank just about.
Are those bicycle earrings?
Yeah, bicycle earrings.
Okay, I'm really feeling the swag. All right, thank you. Any other questions from anyone else? All right, can I have a motion in this? Oh, Councilman Cashman.
Are they e-bikes?
that's the question. All right, thank you all so much for the presentation. You would have a motion in a second.
Move.
Councilman Hines?
Second.
Councilwoman Alvidrez? Roll call vote necessary? Nope. All right, good to go. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate you all.
All right, we're just moving through this. All right, we have
10 minutes.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. All right, we have another presentation by way of Dottie. They have returned to talk about their on-call contract. So you all can set up and introduce yourselves and get started when you're ready. We don't bite.
She doesn't bite.
Oh, well, listen.
Your efficiency today is just...
That's right.
Yeah, we're glad we were here on time and ready to go, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, we hear that when these go too long, that council members just walk out in the middle of them.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen today. Well, thank you all, Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, for having us back today. I am Elena McWhorter, Legislative Liaison for Dottie, and we are going to present again on our professional services and our civil construction on-call contracts. Since I saw you last, we have expanded a little bit in response to some of your inquiries around why on-calls, how we administer on-calls, how we work with DISBO, or the Division of Small Business Opportunity, to progress MWBE goals. And so we have some additional information we'll share today on that.
Right.
You also have a supplemental kind of packet in your materials that has a 2020 to 2026 contract comparison side-by-side, where you can go through and see each of the individual firms per category for both 2020 package as well as 2026. And you can cross-reference kind of what was the original award versus the new award, original goal versus new DISBO goal, as well as who are the new firms who maybe weren't part of the 2020 package, and then who are the MWBE certified firms on our roster. So hope you find that very helpful, and definitely let us know if you need more information. And we are also joined today by one of our MWBE certified contractors who will help us expand on what their experience is like working with the City of Denver. So why don't we start with you, please, as introductions.
Hi, I'm Mary Keith Floyd. I'm president of Goodby & Associates. We're a small civil engineering firm focusing on utility investigations, utility design, and landscape architecture. We have 25 staff, and we've had a chance to work on the 2020 on-call on three task orders, as well as have been selected to continue utility services on the 2026 on-call.
Thank you, Mary Keith. Ryan?
Yes, my name is Ryan Crum, and I am an engineer in our transportation group.
I am Jennifer Williams, and I am an engineer in our infrastructure group.
All right. So again, we'll just cover a little bit more on the how and the why we utilize on-call contracts. You will see that some of our original slides are still in here for that foundational information. So some of that we'll breeze through quickly so that we can get to new information for you. We'll also cover a little bit more detail on the Division of Small Business Opportunity requirements and how they impact our on-call workflow, and then we'll shift into the individual categories. So professional services category, which is resolution requests 25-1643 through 1687. And again, in addition to the PDF supplemental in the appendix slides, you'll see the list of the individual firms as well per category and their associated resolution number. So then we'll also go through our large civil construction category, which is resolution request 1384 through 1389. And then last, we'll just hit what some of the expected 2026 work plan projects are going to be that this this tool will help us accomplish. So again, starting with the why does Dottie and the city utilize on-call contracts to deliver major capital projects? One, this is our tool that we have available to establish and maintain high quality and qualified on-call consultants that are available to help expedite delivery of large capital projects. These are projects that are mayoral initiative, city council district initiatives, Dottie initiatives, as well as other city agency partner initiatives. So as I know you know, we help deliver capital projects on behalf of parks and recreation, building things like maintenance facilities, arts and venues, Department of Safety, building everything from, again, those maintenance facilities to operations facilities to large transportation projects, bridges, parks facilities, all sorts of things. This is a great opportunity to support our local economy and provide jobs. So we've got hundreds of capital projects in the pipeline at any given moment that take a lot of very smart people in a vast range of skill sets and expertise to really weigh in and help deliver high quality products. Also enhancing Denver's vibrancy for our community and our visitors. So really delivering some of those legacy projects that people love to celebrate and show off to all of their friends and family and loved ones when they come to visit. And last, these are some new bullets here. Why do we use on-calls in some scenarios? Accommodating seasonal construction changes or needs is really critical. As we know, we can't always be out pouring concrete 12 months of the year. And so we have to be very intentional sometimes about when we plan our designs and our planning so that we're ready to hit construction in the right time with the right weather conditions. And then last, it's a way that we can mitigate cost escalations between the time it takes to design a capital project and construct a capital project. We also believe that on-calls are a helpful tool to expand access and opportunity for small, minority, and women-owned business partners. We are very intentional and strategic in being transparent, accessible, communicative, and educational partners to interested and qualified stakeholders who want to do business with the city and help us deliver these projects. And so we work with the Division of Small Business Opportunity to identify our certified partners and firms that are able to provide the services within the scope of a capital project. And then through the on-call process, we mentioned this a little bit last time, but wanted to expand on it. We use the mini bid selection process within our on-calls to still create a competitive selection for task orders where we can still have that assessment and scoring model between different firms that we have on our on-call roster on quality of project delivery, cost of project delivery, risks associated, what is their capacity to serve at the time that we may need the service, what kind of capacity do they have across their entire portfolio of work that they're in process of doing. And so it's a great way for us to have those already certified contractors readily available and be able to leverage them when the timing of design projects hitting capital delivery and construction are ready to go. I also wanted to add that during that mini bid selection process, we do consider progress on other on their DISBO goals on prior task orders. So we can see and monitor how a contractor is doing on their DISBO attainment goals. And when we are doing the mini bid selection, we can take a look at how their progress has been, consider what obstacles that they maybe have faced, and provide additional resources and education and materials for them to not only get on track on those other task orders, but start off on the right foot and hit the ground running on any potential future task orders. And then last, this is a very critical tool for enhancing administrative efficiencies, not only for the city, but for our partners as well. I know we are all very familiar that procurement processes are very long and diligent processes for the city, where we take a very diligent focus or approach to scoring and assessing the bids that we receive. And on our end, it takes many staff to review and score and discuss and weigh the considerations of each proposal. But it's also, how do I want to say this? We're talking about reading 30, 40, 50 pages per proposal. And so when we're talking about small or minority-owned businesses who are less FTE or less capacity on the administrative side, preparing those packets of all of the required paperwork, proving their eligibility, proving their standing, their insurance, all of those different details take a lot of time and effort to compile. And so using the on-call process is really creating that streamlined foot in the door to working with the city, so that those firms maybe are only doing one or two proposals per year rather than multiple proposals every single month, trying to keep up with the hundreds of capital projects that Dottie is putting out at any given time. Last, we wanted to provide a little context. Councilmember Hines, and response to your question last time about what are the different types of on-call contracts Dottie utilizes. And so the two buckets on the left are today's actions, where we utilize on-calls for planning, designing, building, constructing large capital projects, including professional services, Jennifer's category that we're considering today, where we're talking about planning, designing, engineering services, architectural services, specialized data and communications and community engagement services on all of the different types of projects that we do. So roadways, bridges, stormwater improvements, green infrastructure, utilities. On Ryan's side, the large civil category package is when we take the projects from Jen's side of the house and we are ready to deliver them. So we've designed and built something that everyone wants to see in tangible in their community, ready to take advantage of. And so through Ryan's team and the large civil construction, we're then delivering those capital projects. We're building the bike lanes, we're building the roadways, we're building the crosswalks, the traffic signals, the intersections, the utility infrastructure. Other types of on-calls that we use that we're not considering today, this third category here is city facility construction. So you'll also often hear Dottie talk about vertical or horizontal construction. When we're talking transportation, that's the horizontal, the roadways. When we're talking vertical, that's building the buildings. And so this is another area where we do have a category of on-calls, where we do essentially all of the same services that you see in Jennifer's professional services and Ryan's large civil, but specific to building that vertical infrastructure for, again, our city agency partners like Parks and Rec, DPD, the library, arts and venues. And then on the far right, you were absolutely correct. We've got some transportation and operations operations and maintenance on calls for transportation maintenance. So these are things like sign replacements, pavement markings, striping, and directional boring. We added this slide in response to a question last time about how does DOTI determine whether to use an on-call contract versus all of the other contracting tools that we have in our toolbox. And so we wanted to describe the process a little bit, that when our project managers have a project ready to initiate, whether it's design or construction, they go through a capital project delivery matrix, similar to these procurement processes where we have a spreadsheet of a lot of scoring and considerations and weighting that we're doing, to identify the most appropriate project delivery tool when considering things like the project scope, project budget, funding sources, and the requirements associated with those funding sources, delivery timeline, cost certainties, and various types of risk. Different types of contracting tools we have. We've got design, bid, build. This is our traditional delivery method where we're talking about a very clearly defined capital project that is moving through the process in a linear or a sequential phasing. So it's going through planning, then it's elevated to and through design before it gets to construction and project delivery, that linear model. The design-build model is a little bit different, where it's an iterative design and construction process. So while we may begin construction of a certain phase of a project, we'll go ahead and go back and start design of the next phase. When we move that phase of design to construction and start construction, we're going and we're starting the next design phase. And so it's kind of taking advantage of that project delivery to construct and deliver portions of a project before going through the full timeline of plan, design, and construction of a major or a full comprehensive project. Construction manager, general contractor. So this you see often comes through council as CMGC contracts. These are ideal for really complex projects that require more closely aligned design and construction services. So this is where you're bringing the design firm in at a much earlier stage to ensure that that integration with construction feasibility and cost certainties are really secure for those much more complex projects. And then last, on calls. Why do we use on calls? These are what we use again for those really dynamic, seasonal, time sensitive, or emergency response opportunities where we want to have the alignment of resource capacity, of firm capacity, and of budget capacity and work plan goals all aligning at the same time. Once we go through this entire methodology and this matrix of how we select a contracting tool, we make a recommendation to DOTI's procurement committee, who then reviews and approves the potential contracting methodology. Last, this page will look a little familiar, but wanted to hit it again because we are so proud of the Do Business with DOTI webpage. This is the one-stop shop for external parties to find every resource, opportunity, communication available about what it takes to work with the city on these types of projects. And so you can find current bidding opportunities there. If there's a project open to bid right now, you can go on there and see what's the scope of the project, the size, the budget, the requirements. You can see checklists and resources and education to run through very easily what's required to make a proposal on this project. So it's right there at your fingertips for new or existing firms to understand what are all of the processes and requirements to getting a bid successfully proposed with the city. It also identifies upcoming opportunities. So if you know, if you're a firm and you know that you've got some capacity availability coming up in a few months and you want to see what the city's putting out in a few months, you can go there and start planning ahead on future bids and proposals. Last, if you don't want to always be going back to the website, there's an email sign up for anyone who's interested to where you can get email notifications of new opportunities that are posted as they become available. And last, just to reiterate, these two professional services category and the on-call large civil on-call category both had a lot of interest in our industry kickoff events, which you see photos of here in April. This is part of that streamlined on-call procurement process I was referencing, where we really do a lot of upfront education, communications, engagement. We do questions and answers with interested parties or vendors. So if it's not clear what the expectations are or what the scope of a project is, they can come and they can ask questions and see if it is an appropriate fit or worth their time to submit a proposal on any given project. So that was a lot about the why. Why do we do on-calls? I'm going to do just a real quick overview of how this process is integrated into larger citywide processes, and then we'll really move into some of the more specifics to today's actions. So on-call contract administration, what you're seeing today is kind of this left bucket where to get in front of you today, we go through this on-call procurement process. We're putting the scope of service out to bid. We're casting a net of all of the different, again, architecture, design, engineering, specialized skill sets that we know that we're going to need to deliver our upcoming work plans in 26, 27, 28. Through that on-call contract procurement process, we're then awarding our on-call contracts to the firms to authorize future work. However, we talked about this a little bit last time. This is not the stage at which funds are encumbered. So any action today on calls does not obligate any funds or expend any funds. How the funds are allocated is through that annual budget process. So as you all are very familiar with, given the timing of today's presentation, you all in October and November will approve the city budget allocating funds to specific line items that then DOTI utilizes to draw down funds for work performed. So again, you'll appropriate the funds through the budget to things like bridges, stormwater, bikeways, pedestrian infrastructure, and then when we have those projects come online, that's when we then go through our mini bid process I was referring to earlier. So when we're ready to then say this project's ready for delivery, we're ready to initiate, we're gonna then go into our on-call contracted firms and we're gonna do our mini bid process. And we're gonna say, okay, we've got this $1 million project in the stormwater category. We've got three firms certified and available, three firms on call available to provide those services. We will then provide that new scope of work via the task order for them to create their bid on so that we can assess for the best value, highest quality project delivery for that task order. Once we then award the task order, that's when the funds are encumbered. And then as the project progresses and funds are spent, the contractors invoice the city, and that's when funds are paid. Last, for your oversight and how you stay on top of the spending of these dollars. Again, that's our quarterly council report that we send out that has all of the details of our on-call contracts, including the contractor, the scope of work that they are providing, the max capacity that they have throughout their contract term, the balance encumbered, the balance remaining, and their attainment on their small and minority and women-owned business goals. I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer here, and we're going to talk through what this means in a real-life project example.
Great. So I'm going to talk through the example, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mary Keith to kind of ask her to tell about some of her experiences with working with the city. She actually was part of this contract, and she also is a prime contractor. She has her own prime contract, and she also has worked as a sub. So I think she has like a unique perspective that I think could be helpful to how we use these contracts in a real life example. So the project example we have today is Tennessee and Oneida. It's a stormwater project. So as Elena was just mentioning, the on-calls are not encumbering money on the front end, so we're using the budget itself. So on the left-hand side, you see in the 2024 mayor's budget, there was a line item for PH 718 storm capital, and it was to continue construction of new and large system in Tennessee Avenue upstream of Garland Park to help protect low-lying and flood-prone neighborhoods. So that's the exact verbiage from the budget. So this is where the money was given to us. So then we actually used the 2020 on-call under the category of stormwater and sanitary, and we worked with Mueller as the prime in this instance, and one of the subs, our MWBE partners on this project for design, was Goodby. And on this project, on design alone, we had almost $200,000 of MWBE spending, and that is 27% of the total spending to date. The project's not quite closed out, so there may be another invoice or two, so those numbers could change slightly as the project closes out. And then construction was also using Ryan's previous version of the on-call contracts. And so again, we have the prime contractor and MWBE partners that helped deliver the project, and you can see how much money at the bottom, over $2 million was delivered by MWBE firms, and that was 18% of the overall spend. And I just, Mary Keith, if you would like to tell us a little bit about this project and working with the city and anything else you'd like to share with us. And thank you again for coming today, too.
Yeah, this is exciting to see how this works, how contracts we get to work on them. So as Jennifer said, we're a subconsultant to Mueller Engineering, that we were already on their on-call task order team. So when they were looking at the scope of services, when this opportunity came through, they called up, hey, Mary Keith, are your staff available to do subsurface utility engineering? Yes, please. So we put together a scope and fee. So of those MBE dollars, and of course I didn't write down that, we probably did about $50,000 worth of utility investigation work. What I think, I was so excited when you brought up this example, because the city's also working on phase three, and that was Goodby's very second task order as a prime through our Category 9 utility engineering on-call, which as a small specialized firm, we don't get to prime very often. So what an exciting opportunity for us to step up and win the on-call and then actually get to deliver on a task order. That was awarded in 2020. We just got it under contract in 2025. So you kind of see the investment in our marketing and going after stuff and then getting a chance to deliver. Working with the city, Sam Pavone is super fun. He's just a great resource. We learn a lot from him. He learns from us. We're looking forward on the 2026 on-call if it's awarded to maybe go after phase four, because this is a very important storm replacement project that has a long way to go in that community.
All right, Keith, do you have any things you want to say or anything that you can share with us about like proposing and things like that, about like how much time it takes you, and sure, as a small business, it's a lot of resource intensive.
And I don't know whether it's easier to think in hours or direct labor dollars, but you forced me to look at numbers I hadn't wanted to look at in a long time, right? The intent, you've got to spend money to get work, and we get that. That's the cost of doing business, but it's also important to still make a profit. So it was really helpful to run the numbers. We look specifically at the level of effort to go after the on-calls as a prime for Category 9, and that was running about 150 to 200 human hours, sometimes, late nights on the weekend, which translates to
like $6,000 to $9,000 direct labor dollars. So that's to win the on-call contract. That doesn't mean you necessarily get work from it. That's our, we call it our fishing license, right? We have our tackle box, we have a rod, we're ready to go when you guys say the flow is right. Then the task order comes along. This task order specifically, this was a pretty direct, simple one to do. It was only about 8 hours for us to work with Mueller to put together the scope and fee. Great, not a huge, we'd already done the heavy lifting with the on-call to show we're qualified. So then we could put together that scope and fee, and then we get to do the work. Some task orders, we do have another task order on 50th and Colorado, where we're the prime and we have a geotech subconsultant, an environmental subconsultant, and it's a bigger team. That task order was a bigger effort. It was about 50 hours or about $3,000 of work, but still, once again, a great opportunity for Goodby to be in that seat. So it's nice to just go after the on-calls once every 5 years, put that heavy effort in, and then as task orders come along that we have the opportunity to bid on, and we have the availability. Sometimes we do no-go it. If we're working on another giant project and I don't have the resources in that 6 months, we say, no, thank you, Mueller, we can't submit on this right now, with the hopes that another one comes along.
So much. All right, we talked a little bit about this 2 weeks ago, but this is a little bit more detailed of the procurement process. So we started this process almost a year ago when we started just thinking about it internally and kicking it off. And from there, you know, we started really at the turn of the year, digging into the details of how we were going to change the scope, how we're going to start working with all of our partners, with DISPO, with the city attorney's office, to start putting all those documents together. Then in April, we did our industry kickoffs that Alina had those cool pictures from our some of our industry events. Then we issued the RFP in April, towards the end of April. We had a pre-bid meeting after the RFP was issued, and we answered tons of questions. Finally, it was an amazing day. The proposals were due. We had almost 100 proposals on the professional services side. And Ryan, how many did you guys have? 19. So we had, we were really well supported by everyone in the industry. It was really exciting to see that all the work that we did to reach out to folks, that I think we got about everyone we possibly could cast their hat in the ring for it. So we had really, really fabulous proposals. We had really talented staff internally, subject matter experts in each category, including in construction for Ryan, take a look at those contracts and find the best of the best. And it was really amazing to see just the quality and the caliber of the work that we got. From there, CAO reviews the contract, reviews all the language, and here we are today, Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. So. That's kind of been our process to date. It's been a long journey, so excited to be here for sure.
And my name is Erin Crook. I'm with the Division of Small Business Opportunity, so I'll speak to this slide. This is talking about the process for DISPO, how we set goals on projects, and how firms can bid on those projects. So when there's a DISPO requirement on a project, meaning a MWBE requirement in this case, the proposer, the prime, submits a commitment to MWBE participation, which explicitly states what percent of attainment they're going to achieve. So we have written evidence that they understand that they need to comply with this program and what their commitment is. And then they also sign our program requirements, again, attesting that they understand their obligation to our program. And they put together an MWBE utilization plan. So that plan is how they're going to go out in the marketplace and find certified firms to be their subs on the project, unless, of course, they're certified themselves. But in most cases, they're not. And so most of the MWBE utilization that we get is through subcontracting. And they put together this plan for how they're going to go to industry events and find these firms, or who they've already got their eye on, who they're going to be able to use when these work orders come up. And that's it's a really good tool, because firms can, the certification process is a rolling process. There are always new small businesses who are becoming MWBE certified throughout the life of these projects. And so by doing these on calls, as the task orders come up,
the primes can go out into the community and get firms who maybe weren't even certified 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And so it's an opportunity to get firms in real time onto these projects. And then as far as setting the participation goals on the projects, we consider multiple elements, the project budget, of course, also the source of funds, because sometimes there's strings attached to different funding sources, scopes of work, the type of services that are going to be included, and any specialized requirements. So like, for example, bridges. There was a question last time about what scopes we were considering in the civil on-call, and we find like bridge inspection is complicated. There's a lot of firms who can't do that. So that sort of thing that we have to factor into the specific analysis on a given project. And then, of course, the number of certified firms that are available in the marketplace. And so that's how we set the goals on the projects. And then during the life of the project, we monitor the progress and work with our DOTI partners. As was discussed previously, we can discuss, you know, how much progress is being made on the existing task orders before issuing a new one, that kind of thing. And then this last caveat on this slide is that the percentages may increase. So when we talk about on-call attainment for 2020, those projects are still ongoing. And the DISBO requirement, they have to meet the attainment by the end of the project. So they have the life of the project to meet the percent of MWBE participation that they committed to. So any figures that we provide on these projects that are ongoing are incomplete because the prime has until the end of the project. Sometimes the scope of work that they're going to assign to an MWBE is later on in the project, and these 2020 on-calls are still in progress.
Thanks, Erin.
Sure.
We'll hand it back to Jennifer, and we'll run through each of our categories today.
Okay, so this is a little bit of a review from 2 weeks ago, but these are our professional services on-call contracts, the 2020 version. We had 13 categories, 48 firms that received contracts. And this version, we had $208 million in total capacity, and we used just over half of that. These were used to deliver not only like the Tennessee and Oneida project that Mary Keith and I talked about, but as well as these other project examples, you know, from a range of design to the master plan update that was given 2 weeks ago as well for the storm drainage master plan. And it's also how we do our annual bridge inspection program. So definitely some great projects. So the new 2026 professional services category contracts, we have one additional contract. The storm and sanitary category we split into two based on some feedback from our vendors and from internal feedback. We did revise the scope and capacity slightly to look to try and forecast, use our crystal ball to see what we were going to be doing in the next 3 to 5 years. And then everybody was allowed to propose on as many categories as they felt they had the resources and the ability to do so. So it was really up to them to decide which categories were appropriate. So like I said, we had 99 proposals and a total of 77 total opportunities. And you can see on the right-hand side the MWBE goals that were assigned for each of the categories. And like Erin mentioned, the bridge inspection one is the only one that was lower, but most of the MWBE goals were very similar to what they were in the 2020 timeframe. So for the selection process, as I mentioned previously, we had 14 unique committees of subject matter experts who helped us pick the firms that were selected. We used consistent criteria across all the different categories to try and be equitable across the categories. We only had one non-responsive proposal according to the DISBO requirements. We selected 45 firms in total. 10 were prime, 10 of the primes were MWBE firms, and we had 12 new firms. And in the spreadsheet that we gave you, we also marked which firms were new per category as well to help just streamline that. Councilman Flynn, I think that was one of your requests from last time as well. And I think I'm going to turn it over to Ryan.
Great, thanks. Recapping the whole construction on-call contracts. So there was only one category. We had 10 firms there, a total capacity of $390 million. And here's some examples of various projects that these on-calls delivered Red Rocks, Federal Boulevard pedestrian improvements, and CTN, Community Transportation Network bike facilities. Moving ahead to what we have for these on-calls is a $400 million total capacity. Each firm is set at $50 million, and there is 8 firms. We are the contract term is for 3 years. So the scope of work that we anticipate using these for is pre-construction services, and then lots of horizontal construction. So intersections, pavement, curb gutter, ramps, sidewalks, ADA. We do some other, do some safety, some signing, striping, those kinds of things. Vision Zero projects are included here. We do have signals, and you'll see here in a minute, we do have some signal projects that are ready for the next set of on-calls, this set of on-calls to go. We will also use these for bike lane infrastructure. And then the last two bullets here on the slide is kind of a catch-all category. Utility work and bridge construction. So that allows others in the infrastructure group or any of our other partners to use these on calls. So it allows them to access these contractors. Moving ahead to our procurement on here, this is very similar to what we did for the professional services as well. We had 6 voting members, 2 non-voting members. We did look at their MWBE requirements, which was validated by DISBO as well. And you can see the criteria that we used to weight, how we weighted each firm. We did receive 19 proposals. 2 of them were deemed non-responsive due to some pre-qualification rules, and the MWBE goals was set at 12%. And we selected 8 firms out of the total 19 proposals.
All right. Just last slide here is a bit more context about what is in Dottie's 2026 work plan that these on-calls would help support. I know you all are very familiar with the Vibrant Bond passage, so these will be a critical tool in helping deliver the Vibrant Bond projects, high quality, timely delivery. They'll also be essential in closing out some of our past bond projects, so Elevate and Rise projects. As you heard Ryan say, they're a critical tool for our community transportation network, the CTN bikeways. So a big one we've got in the 2026 work plan is the Emerson Street neighborhood bikeway through kind of central downtown area, south downtown. We have water quality improvements, Sanderson Gulch improvements, stormwater improvements, traffic signals, and so just a wide variety and a wide scale of types of work that these on-calls help support. And I'll just add, we've got a couple $100 million worth of capital projects to deliver on just Dottie's workbook, and that only grows more and more as we consider our other city agency partners and what's on their work plan and how we work across our agency to deliver major city projects. So with that, we would respectfully request your approval of both categories of the on-call contract packages. Again, the professional services category is resolution request 25-1643 through 1687, and the large civil construction resolution 1384 through 1389.
Thank you so much. We just have Councilman, Hines in the queue.
We'll take 28 minutes. So the first question I have is about the MWBE requirements. So thank you for mentioning that thank you for the spreadsheets sent yesterday that show that some of the in progress initiatives are on track for MWBE requirements. To your point, they just have to meet them at the end. Kind of makes it difficult for compliance, however, because I see in the spreadsheet you sent over, some of the projects are, you know, requirement of 23% participation, and they're at like 6% right now. So what happens if a vendor gets towards the end of the project and they're not going to make their goal? I mean, there's no way for us to hold them accountable until they're done. And by the time they're done, there's nothing we can do, it seems. So help me understand what I'm missing in that circle.
So there's a few accountability mechanisms. So if we get to the end of the project and they haven't met their goal, we request that they submit a good faith effort to us, which is their documentation of what they did to try to meet the goal, because often there are mitigating factors. So this is all a projection at the beginning of the project, right? We project that we think it's reasonable that they could get 30% participation or something. But then what they're actually able to do depends a lot on which task orders they're issued, right? What's the scope of the actual work that they're issued rather than the prospective work that we think they might be issued? Sometimes there are change orders where they anticipate they're going to be able to use certain firms for certain scopes, and they've reserved, like, okay, we're going to use our MWBs for flagging at this point in the project, something like that. And then a scope of work changes, and so then they can't do that. So we give them an opportunity to explain those extenuating circumstances, and we confirm with the PM whether or not their explanation holds water. Is that legitimate? Is that really what happened on this project? And so that's one thing that happens if they don't meet the goal. And so once we do that analysis and we determine, yes, you did make a good faith effort, or no, we think that actually you could have gotten participation and you just didn't, then we can sanction them. So DISPO has sanctioning authority. And so what we would do is hold back from the retainage that they're going to get paid out if it's a construction project. So or if it's professional services, we can project that, we can anticipate, like, okay, you're getting to the very end here and there's not room for you to make your goal, right? And so we can hold back on the final payment. The other mechanism that we have is pre-qual. So I sit on the pre-qualification board, which oversees pre-qualification for construction with both Dottie and Den for the airport. And when firms are trying to get pre-qualified, their past performance with DISPO is a factor. And so I go to those meetings every week and explain what's gone on their prior projects. And that can affect whether or not they get pre-qualified for future projects with the city.
Thanks.
Sure.
If we were to do something like best value contract, it seems like that would be a good criteria to consider. Aren't you glad I'm not going to ask you about Delgany Bridge?
I'd be glad to answer your question.
No. We have enough to talk about in this committee, but at any rate, good to see you in a conversation that is not about the bridge, that particular bridge. So I went to a groundbreaking this morning for Civic Center Next 100, and I think it is it's great that it's a $50 million project that just broke ground today. This morning, I'm so glad that we engaged Studio Gang as our architectural firm, an internationally recognized architectural firm, to move forward with the design. I know that that was something that was a competitive bid, and it was not unanimously supported by council. So I recognize. Yeah, that's fine. That's part of the council process. But I want to go back to the conversation, that I asked about 2 weeks ago, because I don't see it addressed. And just for what it's worth, what I was asking about is, like the 5280 trail, we did not have the opportunity to weigh in on that. And it was given to an on-call vendor. It turns out that, that was funded in the 2021 bond. We did nothing for 18 months, and then out of urgency, out of a time urgency, we gave the entire contract to an on-call vendor. So that's the concern that I brought up 2 weeks ago in committee, and I don't want to just be an obstructionist without suggesting an option. So the suggestion that I had was creating a set of buckets. You have buckets. I'm thinking different buckets. The operational ones, if it's asphalt sourcing or pothole filling, I don't have a concern with that because that's operational in nature. Capital projects, but repetitive, like the $10 million of ADA ramps installed each year, I don't have a concern with that. The concern that I have is when we do strategic projects that are potentially transformative in nature, and those are given to on-call vendors without the opportunity, even for council to say, maybe there's a better, you know, maybe this is a project better suited for a regular, a full RFP, which you actually had outlined in one of the slides, is that if there were, it's an RFP, and you know, but we skipped several of those boxes in, for example, the 5280 trail. So I noticed that wasn't mentioned. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to, did you think about it? Is it a good idea, bad idea? And I'm sorry that we didn't get the opportunity to chat about that between then and now. So anyway.
I guess I would respond that I completely hear you. I don't know that we have the ability to change the types of buckets when considering on calls for major capital. So that slide that you're referring to, you're right, like the design, bid, build is kind of those very clearly identified and detailed scopes of services that are going to be in a linear fashion of starting at point A and delivered in 5 years through the planning, design, and construction phase. I think it's just that we are in a position where, as was mentioned earlier, we're using a crystal ball to try to forecast needs and work plans over the next 3 to 5 years, and we are trying to utilize those most appropriate contracting tools when the scope is very clearly defined and it does make sense to do that design, bid, build or a CMGC or another contracting tool. But there's always going to be those other capital projects that maybe in the hard bid they didn't consider a very specialized scope of work that needs to be done. And we need to then tap an on-call to provide that level of service within the broader project. And so the on-calls really are that supplementary tool to fill those gaps and needs in real time that maybe we didn't forecast in the initial on-call scope or the initial project scope.
I just know that City Council has oversight for anything $500,000 and over, and $600 million. Is over $500,000. So I remain concerned. I've been, you know, felt frustrated before and still don't really feel like I've gotten an alternative. I'm open to discussing alternatives. I proposed an alternative. So again, it's not as if I'm just trying to say no. So I still have reservations. I would love for Dottie to, if you disagree with the idea, all right, well, let's think of another idea. Because of past experience, I don't want to give a blank check of $600 million for Dottie to spend as it wishes for the next 5 years.
Well, I'll just say I wouldn't call it a blank check because the $600 million is then allocated through the annual budget. So maybe a $600 million capacity, but you're providing us the $10 million here for bridge work, the $10 million there for bike lanes, the $10 million there for pedestrian improvements. And so I definitely understand that the $600 million is a lot, and especially in the circumstances and the environment that we're dealing with as a city. But I can't reiterate enough that the on-calls themselves do not encumber or spend any of those dollars.
Yeah, when we go through the budget process, we do approve the budget. We approve it at the agency level. We don't get to approve any lower than that, so we can't say this particular contract is good or bad. We have even in the past, as a council, funded the study for the Office of Community Engagement, and that funding was not spent because, rightfully so, we're trying to reach down below the agency level, and we're frustrated with that result nonetheless. That was 3 years ago. And so I hear that we have the opportunity to budget, but it is at the agency level, not at a smaller scale. Thank you. I don't have anything.
For one addition, for the professional services contracts is just $200 million of the $600 million. Of that specifically, I think we had 300 task orders. And I think close to 80% of them were under 500,000, if that is any consolation for like the scope of what we're doing. Typically, the professional services contracts are below that amount of spending.
I'll also say my concern is not the design or the build part, it's the plan that, you know, like for the 52A trail, that plan. I want the council to have the ability to say this is a transformational project, and it should have a public bidding process as opposed to on calls. But filling potholes, we should do that. We should plow the snow when it snows. Hopefully, it will snow at some point. Maybe later this week, maybe never. But that's. The transformational projects, I continue to have concern, and because there's no way for us to break those out from a council perspective, I remain concerned. Thank you, Committee Chair.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Alvidres.
Thank you. I share that concern, especially when we have so many needs across the city, and when we budget, we don't know what we're budgeting for exactly. You know, I just found out in the news, not from Dottie, that the Mississippi Bridge over the river in my district will no longer be able to have a fire truck go over it. That's very concerning to me. That wasn't included in the bond. So when you say we don't have a crystal ball, the crystal ball is saying that bridges are going to fall that are not funded. The crystal ball is also saying we have $1 billion worth of projects to do in the next 6 years. So there is information that we have. And that is very scary for me, to have bridges in my district where fire trucks can't get over. But I do have some questions. One is, has a business ever been sanctioned for not meeting their goals?
Not that I'm aware of, but I've only been with the city for a few years.
I'd love to know if that's ever happened, because I am curious about that. I don't know if anybody else. Patrick, do you happen to know if a business has ever been sanctioned for not meeting their goals?
Patrick Riley, Department of Finance. Yeah, it's been a long time, but there were businesses sanctioned back in 2010.
Okay. I'd love to just learn about that situation so I can have reassurance that if that is happening, that we are doing something about it. I do want to point out that with the goals, I did have a conversation with someone from your office, and I think there's a fundamental problem in the calculation. You're taking certified businesses that have gone through the process of getting certified and comparing them to every single contractor available to do the work, even though those contractors may not even do government work, even though they may not be qualified to do the type of work that we're trying to do. And so that is making the percentage artificially low. I also am concerned that the disparity study will be coming out very soon, and we'll be re-looking at the ordinance while we're approving all of this money for next year based on goals that are old, based on a disparity study that's over 6 years old. So I want to share that concern. Let me identify. Okay, so another question is, we have some projects on the bond that are like a $90 million bridge, the 8th Avenue Bridge. Would that be able to be done through this on call if I, the way I read it, the $50 million is a cap per contractor?
Correct.
Right. So
a $90 million project would not be able to go through that.
What about if part of it is in the design and then part of it is in construction? Because I'm assuming the $90 million is supposed to cover the design and the construction. So would that be separate on calls potentially?
If it is design bid build, then yes, the design could fall under Jennifer's contracts. The construction would, assuming it's $2 million and $89 or $88 million, right? I think that one's too large, and I think that we have the capacity to let Vibrant Bond projects go through here, but I think that there's still discussions about how those are going to be delivered.
Okay, I appreciate that. And then when we're talking about the capital stack. I know, for example, in my district, some of the bond projects that are not done yet from the 2017 bond did come in different ways, like the Jewel Bridge, for example, that was separately procured. Yes. How does that process compare to an on-call process, or why wasn't that project put into an on-call project?
So that one was delivered to CMGC, as Elena mentioned earlier. So that one typically does not, those alternative delivery does not typically use the on-calls for those. So it a lot of the times it has to do with the funding and complexity. So
the capital stack.
The capital stack, right, matters. So if there's a tight time frame, where we need to design while we're starting construction, then we would do something different than the on-call.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'll submit a couple more questions, but I'm good for today. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Did anyone else have any other additional questions? I'm so sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. and just so I'm clear, I have two bridges on the Bear Creek Trail that are closed suddenly after an inspection. It looks like that might have been an on-call inspection that determined that these two bridges had to be closed immediately. But I've been told that in January, design work will start. So to be clear, these contracts that we're looking at today, would one of those be used to engage the design firm?
It's great questions. Great questions around bridges.
That's only great questions.
yes, but we, so the inspections, the services that you're talking about, Councilman Flynn, as well as the design are both on the current set of on-call contracts. But great example of work that we've accomplished quickly and expeditiously through these contracts. So similarly, moving forward, we just recently met with you to give you the update on the bridges in your district. And if there was to be another Bear Creek Bridge that we had, we identified some things that we're keeping an eye on. So that's how we would identify through the inspection services in these 2026 contracts. That's how we would determine that the bridge was no longer safe. And then, yes, we would use the bridge design category to help design or the redesign of the bridge or a new bridge, depending on the circumstances.
Would it also cover the actual replacement of the two structures?
Yeah. This one could, but the bridge group also has a set of on-calls right now as well.
I'm sorry, say it again.
The bridge team has a set of on-calls as well.
Oh.
So they have, there's a group or a set of bridge on-calls that exists today. But this scope of work today does, it was written to allow bridge construction to go into them.
Right, that's what I thought I saw.
So yes.
And our particular, and in this particular place, the one on Bear Creek that we're so, concerned about, we've got a bunch of tools in our toolbox, and we're looking, like we were talking about, like Elena was talking about earlier, about how there's different options for construction, and we were trying to find the best construction method for to deliver the project the quickest. So that's what we would do there, is look at all of our tools and then see what's best for delivery.
Thank you. I'm hearing good news on the one at Webster, just this side east of Wadsworth, but the one at Newland, I'm not hearing any particular progress on. But this is a major regional trail, and the cyclists and the pedestrians who are using it all the way from Red Rocks to the Platte River have a very hazardous bike lane detour that takes them along Wadsworth Boulevard around a slip ramp where we've installed the bollards for their safety. But I went to the Bear Valley neighborhood meeting last night. There were 45 people there, and the major topic was, why can't we get this fixed faster? Because they consider it to be very dangerous. So I appreciate the additional information. I would like to hear more and better news on the Newland Bridge that's farther downstream. But the Webster one is particularly crucial because of that detour that takes them up along Amherst, along that slip ramp off of Wadsworth. Thank you for the clarification. I appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Councilmember Gilman.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate my colleagues, one, holding this up just to get more information. and then the additional questions, because I think it's really important, because it goes towards our integrity as council people that we championed these bond projects or these community projects, and it would be great to have more communication back and forth. And I know in the past there would be more like, this is who's going to work on this project. Let's introduce you to the GC. Let's have this conversation. What do you as the council person have envisioned for this? Maybe do a community meeting so folks really understand that this project is moving forward, that it's a priority, and then you're also explaining the funding stack, because that is at the crux of everything. There's been broken trust, and that broken trust is never going to get built back up unless there's more openness about sharing with us as council members how that funding stack gets made. I mean, I just found out that a maintenance shed or maintenance shop, it was supposed to be in District 11, it's got like $500,000 from the RISE bond, but the rest is CIP. And I thought the whole thing was supposed to be bond dollars. And it's not going to be a bricks and mortar. It's going to be a manufactured metal structure. And so I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to break that to my residents and how I'm going to share with them that, oh, I thought we were voting for this, but it's been changed. And really, that's not my job to carry water for all of you. That's Dottie's responsibility to be out there and talk with the RNOs. And so we just ask for more communication, because I think that that trust has been broken and that there are ways to build it back up. And so really appreciate this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. I do have a few questions. I have a request, respectfully, if Dottie could include the presentation materials in each of the Legistar items that come before the committee so people who go back and look at the items can see what the presentation was on, if you all can do that in the future. And then I'm curious, is there a record of the procurement committee's decisions on which contract delivery method?
For all contracts, you mean? Or, I'm sorry, or state what? The question again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there a record of how we decided the contract methodology for each project?
The decision. Yeah. So yeah, I guess your methodology.
Uh-huh. I could probably go back to our team and see if we could pull that information together to provide to you all. I'm not sure that we have it publicly posted.
Okay. And then who sits on the procurement board?
Great question. Yeah. We're going to have David Ems join our contract administrative manager.
Hi, Dave Ems, Director of Contracts and Procurement for Dottie. Thank you for all the questions. My brain's hurting with keeping up with them. I think they're spot on. Procurement committee is comprised of 6 to 7 voting members led by the city engineer, a manager on the procurement contracts team, our city attorney's office, and several others that meet every other week to consider best approach, best value procurement, and the best contracting methodology. And that committee can, a PM might come in and do a risk profile and say that this project's not applicable for an on-call because it's more out here on risk. And should the city accept the risk or should we place the risk on the contractor? Those are examples that I think, Councilman Hines, clearly don't fall in the on-call space. So I appreciate your question. You also noted best value procurement. I think it's spot on. When we think about the pre-qual process, we heard back on September 8th, we talked about best value. And I think that's inherent in all of our processes. And Councilman Flynn, on your question about the trail, that's why FEMA deploys on-call contracts. We have to be responsive. We've got to have a vehicle to be responsive. This should be for things that you know about. If it's something that I think is really innovative, strategic, out there, I don't know of an on-call that we do that doesn't make, to me, on-calls make sense because I can identify what they apply to. If it's something that, you know, you're doing something at Red Rocks and you uncover fossils, you know, we don't have an on-call for that. It's a specialty. Your contracting cycle starts off longer. So maybe it's in my prior communications on September 8th, I wasn't that clear that best value procurement is all throughout the process. The competitive process starts one on pre-qual. You got to be screened on the contractor side, not professional services. Two, the on-call contracts themselves is a pool of vendor. Who is, you heard today about bridges. Yes, there's one for bridges because we want the best knowledge and the competition in Denver for bridges. Then we do a task order. Bear Creek went down. Boom, give me this by Thursday. We have the best of the best. We've already screened them for capabilities, certifications, responsiveness, community engagement, whatever it might be, and we can go to bat. So I thank you for your time today. The procurement committee does take into great consideration the alternate delivery method. As you sway from the really well-defined scope on call to high-end integrated contractor, give the keys to a project owner because we don't have the specialty, that is not on call. So I don't have the 5280 example in my head, Councilman Hines, but I'd have to go back and look at how that was procured. I just don't know. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Now, can you tell me who's on the board? That was my original question.
My name, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jim Potter, the city engineer. Okay. Travis Bogan, director of special projects for Dottie. Kara Sequino, she leads our interagency team working with safety, parks and rec, and any other contract that's related to construction citywide. Mm-hmm. Danny Abbott, procurement and contracts manager. John McGrath, city attorney's office. And I'm not a voting member, but I'm on the board. I said I've watched it and governed a little bit.
Okay. And those meetings are closed meetings or open meetings?
They're closed meetings. Okay. Every other Wednesday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions remaining? Thank you. Correct. Thank you so much. Thank you all so much for the time. This is an action item, so if we could have a motion to move this forward. Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Gilmore, a second from Councilman Cashman. Is he on this committee?
If not, what the hell am I doing?
I gotta check this guy out. do we need a roll call vote?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Do you mind? Thank you.
Council members, Alvitres?
Aye.
Flynn?
Aye.
Gilmore?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Cashman?
Oh, I'm on the committee. Aye.
And Madam Chair Lewis?
Aye.
Five ayes.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. We have three items, 13 items on consent. No one has called them off. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you. 'Cause I could eat them every day.